you know how we tend to get some quite random things in our inboxes, probably from well-meaning PRs, but rather misguided PRs. Well, the latest one, have you
Yeah.
seen this? Did you
No,
notice?
I
Okay.
sort of ignore them because they're so silly, some of them.
This one stood out. Shall I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because it's the National Smell and Odor Complaints Report.
Now we are back to your highly sensitive situation, person situation. Every
Exactly.
smell is a problem for
Well,
you. Go on, why is this
exactly.
one
That's
out? What
probably why it grabbed
smells
my
now?
attention. So this press release reveals Britain's smelliest locations for business and domestic complaints. Do we think our midlife listeners are going to be interested in this?
Who lives in Britain's smelliest city? Tell
Well,
me.
anybody in South Yorkshire, I'm telling you, you've got a
Oh
problem
dear.
because Barnsley and Sheffield were in the top five, along with Gateshead, Hounslow, and Birmingham.
Sounds so, isn't it?
Well, yes, I know. I'm just telling you, Barnsley and Sheffield were in South Yorkshire, and then these were the other ones.
I'm just checking your
Just checking the
geography
geography.
because you know
Anyway,
I got a B in my geography
yes. Does anybody
GCSE and you got
care?
a
Is the
C.
question. Maybe the listeners could let us know, and then we can tell these PRs
Well,
why.
also, what
Nobody
is to
cares.
do with that
Yeah,
information?
I don't
Now we know
know.
some cities are smelly and some aren't. Where do I go with that? Do I bring it up at dinner? Shall I tell the famous people I know? Do I put it on my Instagram? I mean, what's
No.
the point?
Well, I suppose we have just spent 3 minutes talking about it, so there we go.
That's the point, yeah.
Hello. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy, and we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
Well, hello everyone. Can I start this week's episode by saying bravo to you all for being curious, empathetic, and open-minded individuals?
What are you talking about now, Trish? Whose arse are you blowing smoke up? Where are we going with this?
No, there is some science behind it, don't worry. Because what I'm saying is that there's a recent study which has revealed that podcast listeners are likely to be more curious, more open to experience, and less neurotic. The non-podcast
Wow.
listeners, and we're all in a parasocial relationship, apparently.
So it is a parasocial relationship where we feel like we're friends, even though we haven't met and we don't know each other and no one's bought anyone a drink.
Exactly. Bingo. That's exactly it.
And
And
got it.
apparently, if you're listening on headphones rather than speakers, you can feel even more like you're having an intimate relationship with whoever you're listening to, which is us effectively, isn't it? But unlike social media, podcasts don't leave listeners, apparently, with negative emotions. And in fact, there's an association between neuroticism, if that's the right way of saying it, and using social media. So I think you need to be warned because you're a bit of an Instagram queen, aren't you?
I just like an audience, Trish, and I'll take it in any form I can get it. And I think the neuroticism may have started long before
yes.
social media.
Yes.
I wonder if they've done
you
any...
posting your breakfast on Instagram. Exactly.
No, I've never posted my breakfast.
No.
I draw the line.
Okay.
I draw the line
Fair
at
enough.
Breakfast.
Fair enough.
I wonder if they've done any studies of Facebook groups, because our members on our Facebook group are very kind and funny and supportive as well, aren't they? Should we give some shout outs to some of
Oh,
our
I think we
favourites?
should. Yes. Yeah, we should, because we've had a few really unusual ones, but good ones, haven't we, this week?
I loved Sonia. She posted a picture of her 80-year-old, I'm saying it again, 80-year-old aunt skydiving and zip wiring in Hawaii. How amazing
I mean,
is that?
That is some fantastic. And we had a similar one with Lucianne posting a picture of her 75-year-old mother, Carol, doing a 10K run. And Lucy says Carol took up running age 60 and hasn't stopped since, despite a hip replacement operation last year. And she says, I'm so proud to be her daughter and hoping I continue to get better with age, just like her, but I'm nowhere near as fit. And then another member, Claire, added to this thread that she was in a swimming competition recently and one of her competitors was 85.
Well, your knees don't need to work in a swimming costume.
You need some hips, though. You definitely need some hips.
I would say, gosh, any woman who running over 40 has got to have kind of rubber knees, as it were. Yes, it's swimming is the reason I took it up is it can go on forever and ever and ever. It's literally because it's not weight bearing. It's a sport you can do forever. I'm very
I like
pleased
that.
To hear that.
But of course, despite all this jolliness and friendliness, that's not to say that we're all gliding through life with a big old smile on our faces, because we do all have our troubles too. And we're going to be tackling some of those today as we once again turn agony aunts with our advice for some midlife dilemmas later on in the show.
I think I gave birth to most of the things that are causing me trouble, Trish. At this stage of life,
there's a genetic link.
Oh my goodness me. And our guest this week is no stranger to the ups and downs of life. I'm so excited to have her on the show because she's been an icon, I would say, for our generation ever since she came onto our screens as a four-year-old in the Bird's Eye pea popping advert. It's none other than singer, actor, model Patsy Kensit.
I know, isn't she fabulous? Because that advert is a nostalgia noodle, yes, isn't it, in itself, one we haven't covered so far. Would you like me to sing the song?
I don't want you to do singing, and I don't want you to speak in French, because I think both of it is slightly upsetting for people.
Okay, can I do the pea popping sound? Do you remember
Can you wolf whistle? You're one of those women that can whistle with your hands in your mouth, aren't you?
I can do pea popping though.
You
put your index finger inside your cheek and then you pop.
That's a good one, isn't it?
That's what we were all doing back in the 70s after watching that advert.
I can't do any of those sounds. I don't know what's wrong with me.
It's because you haven't tried. Go on, try.
Nothing.
You need to pack your lips, put your finger in.
Putting my fingers in my mouth.
All right then, fair enough.
Come on.
God knows where they've been.
I just want to apologise now for that whacking sound. One of our neighbours, two doors down, I'm going to say he, because it's really quite furious making. It's building something with a really large hammer by the sound of it. So I can hear it. Sorry, listeners. Sorry.
There's some popping over it.
No.
Pop. No, okay.
Shall we just get on with the show?
I'll just get on with it, yes.
Today's guest is one of the most iconic names of the 1980s and the 1990s, a singer, actor and model. Patsy Kensit has been part of the fabric of the Gen X story since she starred in Absolute Beginners with David Bowie in 1986. While we were all prepping for our O-levels and CSEs, Patsy was partying in Soho with Madness, Wham and Spandau Ballet. She even formed a band with her brother, Eighth Wonder, which had two top 40 hits. Patsy has had one of the longest careers in film and TV, starting at the age of four when she appeared in a Bird's Eye Peas commercial. She has starred alongside Mia Farrow, Robert Redford, Joan Collins, Roger Moore and Elizabeth Taylor, with whom she struck up a friendship. Her most recent TV credits include Emmerdale, Holby City, McDonald and Hobbs, and Strictly Come Dancing. And more than 7 million people watch Patsy's Who Do You Think You Are, exploring her family heritage. Patsy, now 54, was one of the first celebrities of this generation to talk openly about her traumatic experience of menopause following a hysterectomy almost a decade ago. Today, we'll be chatting about Patsy's career, her future plans, and how she's coping now that both her sons, James, 29, and Lennon, 22, have flown the nest. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Patsy.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Now, it's lovely to have you here on the show. We first met, didn't we, in, I think it was 2019, and you wrote a piece for me in Sunday Times Style about your menopause, just before people were talking about the menopause and perimenopause, and it was quite traumatic for you, but you wanted to get that message across to other women. Tell us what you went through.
Well, I'd been going for my sort of yearly checkup at the gynecologist's, and everything was always okay. And I went to have a smear test done and everything, and a little ultrasound, and my gynecologist said to me, there's a massive cyst here. He used the word massive. And I was like, what? And he said, oh, can't you feel it? And often at the end of the day, I would feel that the right side of my stomach would get a tiny bit bloated. He said, you have to go and give blood immediately. My mother died of cancer.
Yeah.
She was diagnosed as terminal when I was four, and she lived till I was 22. Mm-hmm. I knew the rigmarole. He said, you have to get the bloods taken immediately. And then I remember walking down Wimpole Street, just in floods of tears, and just saying, please, God, please, I will never take anything in vain again. Please, my kids. Gave the bloods, went home, and then at 11 o'clock at night, I got a call from the gynecologist and said, you're in tomorrow. You need to have this cyst removed. We think it's benign, but it's a complex tumour, is what they're called. So I went in and I had it removed. They didn't touch my ovaries or anything. And then about 3 months later, I had a checkup because obviously we'd just done the operation 3 months prior. And there were two more cysts, literally one the size of a football and one that was attached to my bowel that had grown and from nothing. And so I basically said, you know, what are my options? And they said, well, we can remove them and, you know, remove part of your ovaries, or do you want to have any more children? I've been blessed with such great boys and, mm-hmm. and I've loved being a mother. You know, the factory's closed. Yes. And it literally is now because I had a hysterectomy, which was, I woke up in intensive care and there was a girl of 30 in the next sort of pod that you're in. She'd had to have a hysterectomy too, and she had cancer. So I remember her mother crying about it, and it was just a dark time. So I waited for the results to come back, and all the cysts were benign. You know, you don't need to see a gynecologist anymore, and off you go. There was no, okay, so now your hormones are going to
You're in menopause.
Yeah, I was in full on menopause.
How old were you?
I was, it's 2013. So,
right, yeah. Before, okay.
I did math. I wasn't even perimenopausal before this. And I woke up in intensive care and I didn't know what was I doing. Why was I here? I've always prided myself on having a really great memory because I've had to learn scripts my whole life, and it's like a muscle that in your brain. And couldn't remember a conversation. We'd be talking now, and I would suddenly say, "Lorraine, what were we talking about again?" Mm-hmm. It was just brain fog. Anyway, I went to see a hormone therapist, and I got the HRT patch, and it was not great. It wasn't really working for me. I was, you know, having to give all this blood and they couldn't get it right. And I don't think with HRT, one size fits all.
No, it doesn't.
No, we're all different. And what I found out is that there are ways of managing this specifically to your needs. So anyway, I had a book coming out at this time. And the night before going on this morning, I had to see that my hormone guy, and he said, listen, we've got this amazing thing, it's an implant, and we're just going to little nick and put it in your backside, and you're going to feel so much better. Now hindsight's such a great thing, right?
Yes.
But I thought, well, it doesn't matter that I'm doing this big book thing now for the next 10 days and I should really just stick with what I know. But yes, give it to me, it could make me feel better. Anyway, I had the worst reaction. I barely slept. I got to this morning studios and the girl does my hair and makeup. What's the matter with you? I was shaking. And really, I should have just said, listen, I'm not well. I need to leave.
Yeah.
But soldiered on. I sat down on the couch with Phil and Holly and completely blanked. Didn't know why I was there. And I said, I'm really sorry, but I've just had a hysterectomy and I'm suffering from the menopause. So, and of course, and that was out of the gate promoting the book. It's not ideal. In hindsight, not much help really. People didn't talk about it. It was I had to go and defend myself, but I'm a lucid individual. I mean, by the end of the day, actually, it was a lovely journalist from the Telegraph came in and gave me this big hug and said, I know exactly what you feel like, and but nobody would talk about it. It was like a dirty word. So anyway, now of course it's the tsunami. And of course, I'm so glad, because if I'd known how I was going to feel afterwards, I would obviously have just done so much more research, and I didn't, like an idiot. Finally, to get myself well, I found this lady, and she came back to me and said, I don't know how you have been coping. I'd stopped driving my car. I've always driven because I didn't feel confident behind the wheel. I thought I had dementia.
Yeah.
I went to Waitrose. I went, got it in there. And I thought, why am I here? And I bought, there's a true story, a cabbage and a pair of American tan tights, which none eaten or
worn.
They sorted it out. It was a shame that to be shamed over something like that. And of course, it wouldn't happen now. It was very hard.
And you had to carry on working throughout this time. Obviously, you talk about your promoting the book, but you've always worked, haven't you? You've been working since the age of four. And I think that, you know, during this period of our lives, quite often we're right in the middle of big jobs, the pressure, the families, all of that kind of thing. I mean, if you were to do it all again, what would you do differently? What advice would you have for women?
I would say if you're going in to have a hysterectomy, immediately you have to please do your research on the symptoms you are going to feel immediately. This mm-hmm. is not going to come gently. If you don't have to have a hysterectomy, you're perimenopausal. Mariella Frost Drupp's written this great book, Cracking the Menopause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lorraine, you were so supportive towards me about what happened. I'm of an age where you don't really kind of ask doctors much. And that sounds really like pre-war mm-hmm. 1940s. But I think I was in such a shock.
Yeah, it's quite a big thing to go through. But I mean, at the same time, though, with the tumours, you're 54 now. So your mum died when she was 53. And actually, Nigella Lawson wrote a piece for me about this, when you outlive your parents. Okay. It does happen to a lot of women in this midlife. How do you feel about it, and how do you deal with those feelings? Because you must be thinking about your mum a lot at the moment, I guess.
Well, all the time. When I said goodbye to her at least 11 times before the age of 12, she was diagnosed in the 70s, and you know, it's nothing like what now, that we have today. And she defied all the diagnosis. She fought and she fought and she fought because she loved so much. And my dad was in and out of prison. You know, I went to a convent, but I was an actress. And I, in my mind, thought, I can, if I work, then I'm going to be able to make my mum well, because I'll be able to buy her health. I mean, a futile crusade of innocence. But I think that what happened for me was I was aware of my mortality incredibly young. And I think once you grasp the concept that we're not going to be here forever, your childhood kind of fades a little bit. I faced it my whole life, and I'm reconciled with it, and I miss my mum every day. She couldn't have HRT because she had cancer. I never heard her moan about a hot flush. I mean, she did. She was an angel. Nothing wasn't talked about. And she never said to me. I mean, periods were, you know, I knew about them. My mum had talked about those. But I think that the change, as you know, is called sometimes, is such the correct word for the menopause, because it's like grown up puberty. You know, because everything is changing and it's all hormone based, which is why, you know, as teenagers we're unbearable, and then, you know, you come back, you have your own kids, and then they're unbearable. I mean, without sort of getting heavy, it was just it was a childhood full of anxiety, and I mean, I miss my mum every day of my life, but I have to carry on and be a good mum to my sons.
And like me, Pat, I think you became a mother after your mum had gone. So my mum died just shortly before I had my twins, and I found that very conflicting, because that not having her there, but being blessed with these two, you know, little babies. And how did you find parenting? I mean, you've talked already that you love being a mother and you've got these two wonderful boys. And how have you found it? Because they're in their 20s now.
They're in their 20s, they're grown up. I missed my mum even more. I had James a year before she died. She saw me with my child.
Yes.
And I remember that she was over one day with my aunt, and I was changing James on his changing mat. And my mum saying to my aunt, my God, it's like watching a child look after a child, because I was, you know, I was 20.
You were young,
just coming up for 22. None of my girlfriends had babies. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's that, you're screwed then as well, because no one understands the sleep deprivation and why am I feeling slightly blue when this is the most magnificent time of my life, and all these things just weren't discussed. And I'm so sorry for my boys that they didn't have her in their lives, because she was amazing, and I could never in any way go as close as she was to being the most perfect person. I miss all the time.
How were the teenage years with the boys? Because teenagers are just that. I mean, menopause is a shock. Becoming an adult is a shock. Mothering teenagers is a real shock.
Yeah.
I mean, you had partners and people in and out of your life, but you primarily done it on your own, haven't you? You've really been, you know, the one solid, single, constant person in the boys' lives. That's quite a lot to do. You know, day and night alone, isn't it?
Yeah, the teenage years are a minefield. I mean, it's literally, I remember when my eldest son's 12th birthday, he went up the stairs in his petit bateau pajamas and smelling of butterflies. And then he came down the next morning at 13, smelling of pizza, everything. It was like the Harry Enfield sketch that he was doing.
Yeah.
It was just that. And I was like, but why? You used to say you wanted to marry me when you were four, and whatever. And he's like, don't say that. I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but of course. But anyway, so I had to deal with that. And I think that the best lesson I learned was you don't always have to have the last word.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped a lot with my youngest son, who they were good boys, and they I always knew where they were, and I'm very proud of them. I remember my mum saying to me at 14, I was storming up the stairs in our council house, and she said, "I don't know what's happened to you." And I thought, what's she talking about? I'm exactly the same. You know, clearly I wasn't. No. And I remember that a lot with the boys. Mm-hmm. But the good news is they come back.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to ask you.
They move back even.
Oh, they do. Because mine are both going
over there.
Mine are both going in September, and I had a calm phase, and now I'm going into it. Oh my God, they're going to be gone and going to be properly empty nest. I mean, that must be, it's quite an unusual feeling to be on your own after all this noise and chaos and everything after, you know, many years. How did you cope with that?
Terribly.
I mean, it's really sad.
I've got friends who kids are going off to university in America and, you know, or doing this and that. I mean, I was sobbing at the station. My son went to Italy to learn Italian because his dad's got a hotel there, sobbing as he got on the Gatwick Express.
But I think it's a bigger shock than anyone can possibly imagine. I mean, my eldest left the year before last, and I thought I'd sail through it. I thought I'd drop her at uni and I'd come home. I'd be a bit tearful, but I was grief stricken for weeks. Yeah. I mean, I just kept counting the hours till she texted me, rang me, or came back. I couldn't go in her bedroom. I couldn't go into the bedroom. It was too upsetting.
I mean, they do come back though, emotionally and physically. I've realized that it's a nice problem to have. They want to come back to their mum, their clinic careers are flourishing, and they do have their own places, so.
Mm-hmm.
So you must look back on your career, because it's quite an iconic career for our generation. I mean, there isn't a Gen X British woman who doesn't know who Patsy Kensit is. And you were in London in the 90s. It was a kind of cool, crazy time. What do you think when you look back on that?
There were so many great things. And I only wish what I've learned in my 40s and 50s is to stop caring what other people think of you.
Yeah.
And I was very, very conscious of what people would write. Or, I mean, thank God we didn't have those, the tabloid magazines at the in the supermarket, because I used to have to do the shopping and keep my head that way so I wouldn't see, you know, Fatsy Patsy and me stuffing a cake down the face walking down the road.
Did you have fun in the WAG Club?
The WAG Club was great, and I was very young. I was 14, 15 when I went there. My brother got me in, and it was like walking into Top of the Pops, you know. It was everyone in the top 10 was in this club. So, you know, I would... me and my best friend at school, Selina, would lie to our parents that we were at each other's house, and we'd go to the WAG. And then I think the 90s, I think it was a great time. I had a few very late nights.
Yes. Did you keep the clothes? Have you got like this magnificent wardrobe of fabulous 90s stuff?
I got a lot in storage. It was a fun time, but also just happened. I don't know, it might define me in certain people's minds, but I had a lot of growing up to do, and I needed bereavement counselling, which I never offered when my mum died. I don't know now how that works. The media got an image of me as this quite sort of fragile, emotional person, because there were photographers outside the house all the time. I was diluted completely, or my career, which had up until that point flourished, and I've continued working. I've had an amazing career, but I was never written about in these sort of magazines or papers before, and affected me. And I wish I hadn't have cared so much. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that isn't happening now to me. Mm-hmm. I love my life now. Yes, it was fun. Doing the Vanity Fair cover was, and I hate to crush people's dreams, but it was just a photo shoot that we just pushed in to do. Everyone wants to know, oh my god, was it a party, DJ, was everyone like, you know, no, actually not at all.
It sounds like could have been a really tough time. Did you have good people around you? Did you have good friends? Do you have people looking out for you?
I have two friends that my best girlfriends, and that have been that way for 23 years. Mm-hmm. So they were there. I lost a lot of friends because I think people didn't really understand me in that kind of in the mix with all of that, and I think they didn't know that I was enjoying it. But I look back and it was fun, and I shouldn't have been embarrassed about things that was done or said or taken it too seriously, and move forward. And looking back, it was great, but there are more great things. I feel the joy of walking out of my apartment and going on the Jubilee line into town just to do a voiceover or to go and have lunch with one of the boys. It's wonderful. I could never have done that 20 odd years ago. It just wasn't the case. There were people there all the time. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how much harder it is now, because there's so many, and it's also reality based, where there seems to be no line of kind of dignity that people will stop at. The world has changed, and it changes every day.
And what keeps you sort of sane now? Because you've slowed down a bit, and you've said that you say no to things that you don't want to do anymore. You don't have to work at that manic pace anymore. How do you manage your life from a kind of mental point of view and a wellness point of view now? What keeps you happy and grounded?
Well, I mean, I did a bit of a Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys. You know, he suddenly went to bed for 7 years. after I left Holby, which is a wonderful show to be on, I was on it for 4.5 years. It was hard work, I went to bed for about a month, I would say, functioning and washing and stuff, but I was just so tired. You couldn't believe it. And then I went straight in and did Strictly. Mental health now, thank God, people are talking about it. I have days I'm so sad, I don't know why, and I don't want to, you know, leave the flat, but I force myself, you know, to go get out and go for a walk. And obviously when I'm working, there's nothing else to think about than the job. But I can understand how people can become can isolate. And thankfully, I've got two sons that were living with me at the time and are very caring. It's the three of us. That's the Trinity, our family, and we're very, very close.
Mm-hmm. You do a bit of running, don't you? I've seen you do a bit of running, Patsy.
I do. That's
the Bastard Hill, as you call it.
Bastard Hill is such a bastard. I nearly said the C word when I was doing it, actually, because it's at the end of my run. This is the perfect day. I go to bed really early. 8:45.
Good for you.
Wow. Yeah, I wake up at 5:45 and I have my workout gear next to my bed. Get up, I say thank you for today, thank the universe and everything, all the blessings, and I put on my running stuff and I get out the door. On the days I don't do that, I don't feel as good as, for instance, I ran today. Yeah. Believe you me, it's the first 10 minutes are hard. But you do go over the bump and you feel quite good. Mm-hmm. But let's be real, it's a drag. I wish I could eat cake or breakfast. I hit the snooze button.
It sounds like 50s are turning into a really good decade for you. So you're feeling really positive about life going forwards.
I'm very lucky because I've been able to work. I worked a lot through the pandemic. A movie I was going straight on to, that got pushed. And then I started to feel, okay, this is going to be quiet for a while. But I made a movie two movies last year. That's a blessing. One of them's an American film, a big release, which I'm very excited about. And I currently have two scripts sitting here with conflicting dates, but to lovely parts and parts that are right for me. You know, I love matriarch. Mm. I need to make a living. I have to work. Mm. I have to pay bills. I can't sit and eat cake all day as much as I want to and listen to the voice.
We need to talk about love because you've been married four times, haven't you, Patsy?
Yes.
You did call yourself a hopeless romantic.
Yeah.
What, are you still a hopeless romantic?
When I don't get brain fog like I have done on this podcast.
Well, I mean, it happens to us all.
Join the club. We're all in this together. Don't worry.
Does it happen to you, really?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Just... Not as much, but it still happens.
Better now on HRT, I can remember stuff. But before, I couldn't remember which side of the road I had to drive on. It was I had to come back in and ask my kids, I just can't work it out, left or right, and they just think you're a moron anyway. But that was before HRT, basically. And I thought I had dementia, so I was kind of but
no, thank you for that, because it's so nice that we're women are uniting and supporting. But back to love, I'm a hopeless romantic. I can't change the rules of the law, and I consider my first husband, who was lovely, and my last husband, they were such short periods of time, and I was with Jim and Len's dad for years. So I kind of count them as my two marriages. I know that's not allowed because I know there was a ceremony.
Do what you like, Patsy.
But I feel that those were the really significant relationships and very, very deep and wonderful in so many ways. But like I said, I look back and just think, why the bloody hell did I give a toss about this? You know, it was funny. And that's been really liberating, actually. Being 54, 60 was always my scary age, but it's not now. I think 60 is, I'm going to be even more alive, and please God, I make it there and be there for my kids to watch live and laugh.
And being single doesn't faze you at all, having been in a lot of relationships.
Well, I married all my boyfriends. That was something that, again, I've learned I needn't do. I date, and it's just really nice to be private. Mm-hmm. I really cherish it, because there were many years when I couldn't do anything. Like I said, hello.
Sorry. That was my daughter returning from her A level. Oh. She just returned one.
Well done.
Well done, Esme.
Just popped in the door. Sorry, Patsy.
No, don't be silly.
But you must get recognised, Patsy. Do people not come up to you? Because you are quite recognisable. I mean, you're still very glamorous.
I look like shit. I've got no makeup on. And I just don't know at all. Mm. I think there's a way you can draw attention to yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I think that it's also a way of just knowing the places not to go. Having a normal, like a peaceful life. I love my children more than anything. I love the fact that I've been through this really, really traumatic health issue, and I've come out the other side, and I'm so supportive to all of you ladies and other women, and you're not alone. I'm still working in my 50s. It couldn't be better. Filming does mean standing in a cold, wet field with wet feet, eating a half-cooked sausage from kitchen catering. I hate barbecues because it reminds me of being on location. Oh. It's like, I don't like barbecues at all. So that comes into my head when I think, right, I'm going back to work. Okay, yeah, wet feet, being cold, half-cooked. Oh,
but you love it. You still love it.
You do the acting for free, and they pay you for all the other stuff.
Yeah.
That's why you get paid.
Well, thank you very much, Patsy, for coming on the show. It's so lovely to see you at last. It was so lovely to see Bowie. I mean, he's the great love of your life, isn't he now?
He's my man.
Yeah.
I'm a cat lady, and I'm proud of it. He lies in my arms at night, literally, and puts his head on the pillow. I mean, there's no room for any man. You're not going to let them.
Good for you.
But listen, I'm so honoured that you asked me to speak. I'm so honoured that I could do that piece for you. I apologise about the brain farts.
Oh.
just goes to show, it's, you know, hormone gate is happening straight away after I get off this. And I'm wish you so much success, and I'd love to come back anytime if you want.
Yes,
anything.
Oh, we do want you with us, Patsy.
I would love to come and give you as much time as you want. Thank you.
This week's How to Win at Midlife is our once a season Agony Aunt special, where we both act out our Kathy and Claire fantasies. The dilemmas are, of course, anonymous, but I like to make up names on a theme. And this week, in honour of the Queen's Jubilee, they will all be based on the name Elizabeth.
Do you like that idea? I like a royal theme. Trish.
Yes.
I like a royal theme. So I'm sure Her Madge would approve as mm-hmm. well. Shall we start with Betty then?
Yes.
Betty says, my husband came home from a night at the pub with an old friend and told me that his friend had told him how unhappy he was in his marriage, that his wife was always stressed and angry and seemed generally unhappy all the time. They don't usually talk about such personal matters, so my husband was surprised and said he just listened and didn't offer any advice. The problem is, his wife is one of my best friends and I don't know what to do about it. I wouldn't dream of telling her and breaking my husband's confidence, but I feel I should try and help somehow. Auntie Trish, what should we do?
Well, I would say there are two strands to this. Firstly, what to do with your friend, and secondly, did her husband do the right thing by telling her? Actually, I'm going to start with the husband. I would say bravo to the husband for listening to his friend and not offering advice, because quite often the common mistakes we make as friends is that we try and jump in with advice, and really what the person just wants to do is be listened to and comforted. And you know, that's what friends do best. We're not trained counsellors. But should he have told his wife? I think not, because now she feels the burden of knowing this secret about something very intimate in her friend's marriage. But I suppose he wanted to offload, didn't he? Because he was probably quite surprised by the whole thing.
Yeah,
exactly. Fella. But back to the question, what should she do? Well, I think any suggestion that her friend might know about this conversation would feel, I think, like a huge betrayal of trust for the friend. So that would be between the friend and her husband, and the friend and our listener. So I think she cannot know what has happened here. And I think the only thing to do is to try and spend some time with this friend and check in with her, have a coffee, go for a drink, and try to have a kind of fun friend's evening, but no fishing and no leading into a conversation about this. Because if it is a problem from her end and she wants to talk about it again, that's great, but just listen and try to be comforting. And I would say don't report back to your husband, because you don't want it to kind of just escalate and become something bigger. Because do you know what? This guy might have just been having a bad day and had a row or something, and it's perfectly normal to be unhappy in a relationship from time to time. But ultimately, if your friend really does need help, I think suggest a counsellor or contacting Relate. What say you?
Well, I'm in the either or camp. Ooh. Either stay completely out of it, do nothing.
Yeah.
Leave. Or face it all up.
Oh God, really? Would you?
My instinct personally would be to not get involved, because things ebb and flow, don't they? It's like when your kids come home and say so and so's been awful to me and I hate her and I never want to speak to her again. And then obviously she comes around for a play date the next day and you think, what the hell is
what was that all about?
Yeah, what was that all about?
Yeah, could you
involved? Stay out or get involved, either one. I think it's quite difficult, but
I'm going check in with friend, but don't let on what's going on. Right. So next up we have Liz, who says, I have two children, a 17-year-old daughter who is very rounded, a great conversationalist, works hard and has a part-time job. My 14-year-old son, who is quite the athlete, running 30 kilometres a week, cycling around 100 kilometres and going on these long distance cycling trips. He's a lovely boy, but is hopeless at having a conversation on anything outside running and cycling. Problem is, when we have family gatherings, everyone oohs and ahs at my son saying, isn't he brilliant? And if my daughter pipes in and says she would like to one of those long cycle trips, everyone just laughs at her, which I think is so unfair. I don't know what to say to her besides saying she should ignore them, and what to say to others when they make these tactless comments. Lorraine, you are a parenting expert. We need your advice.
Well, my advice is that relatives should always come with a health warning in these situations. I talk to experts about this around exams, actually, because there is, and it's really common with grandparents, they will compare grades. So they'll say, oh, you did you, what did your sister get? What did your brother get? And it's really dispiriting for the family. They often do this at kind of pivotal moments. So you know there's going to be a gathering, it's Xmas, it's Sunday lunch. So you can distract during those moments. But what the experts advise me to do is to take advance action and to point this out to the relatives. But what you have to think about is, are your children upset about this, really? Does it, or are they really not bothered? Or because it's your relatives, are you replaying, are you upset about it as the parent?
Yeah.
Because this is how they were with you when you were little. Because it's a pattern, isn't it? And there's a lot of patterns in families, and they get replayed when families gather together. So you need to check absolutely that your kids are worried about it, that it is hurting them rather than just a mildly annoying. And you should say to your relatives in advance, I don't like it when you do this. The best way of saying this is to avoid things like saying, you always, when you the conversation begins with, I don't like it when you do this, it upsets us, or it upsets us as a family when they do this, could you please try and avoid it? So you're not blaming them or putting them in a terrible position around feel awful about what they've done, because it might be just completely subconscious. What you're actually doing is saying is how it affects you and how it makes you feel, and obviously if they're closer to you in as relatives, then they should not want you to feel like that. They should be in a more receptive mode outside of the actual gathering. And also maybe worth explaining that you don't value your children around achievement, that grades, cycling, all of that is not, you value them around their personality and, you know, being funny and getting on, and making sure also that your husband or partner or the other caregiver is on the same page when you do this. Because again, they may say, oh, to be honest, I hadn't really noticed it. So it's just self-checking a little bit and then having an open, honest conversation, but not blaming the relatives.
No, exactly. I think it's just that they kind of need to understand that, you know, comparison just leads to poor self-esteem, doesn't it? You do that. And I think just if it's happening and you haven't had the conversation before, you know, it's about, there's two things you can do. You can either kind of then talk about strengths of the other kid, your other child, or you can just deflect it, completely change the conversation as soon as it starts happening. So if you're in the moment and you haven't had a chance to pre-warn them.
I'm quite firm though, because we've had it around exams, and I just say, we don't talk like that in this family, so we don't care who got what, so please don't do it. Because if you just deflect, it keeps happening.
Right. But I think I'm thinking more like deflect. If it suddenly happens, you deflect and then you could have a conversation.
Yes, you could. But you do have to have the conversation, I think.
Definitely.
You do have to point it out. And it is, you know, it's not a hard conversation. It can be a soft one as well. Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Lisa. Is that royal? Is that out of Elizabeth?
Lisa from Elizabeth. Exactly.
I like this one. My husband snoring is driving me to distraction. I'm finding it hard enough to get a good night's sleep anyway at the moment, and lying next to someone who sounds like a jet ending taking off is the last straw. If I'm not asleep before him, I have to go to the spare room, as I know I'll get more and more frustrated and can only poke him in the ribs so many times. Oh my goodness, this has come up a lot on the Facebook page.
I know, it's just one of life's you know, things, isn't it, really? And I think lots of heads will be nodding at this, including mine, because my husband is a snorer. I have to say, mostly when he's had a few beverages, the beer
makes
kind.
It worse.
Yeah, it does. So I know that usually Friday or Saturday this is going to be happening. So he gets
put, you just put a pillow over his face, don't you, Trish, until he stops breathing.
That could be it. That could be the solution. Put Margot over his face. That would do the same job. But he'll go off to the spare room. But if that's not an option, because we're away somewhere, or if I wake up in the night because of the snoring and I can't rouse him, you know, because he's in this deep slumber, what I do is I have my trusty Boots silicone earplugs sort of literally wedged in the side of my mattress so I can just reach for them in the dark. Because what I don't want to be doing is getting up, you know, because then you're not going to get
wake
back to sleep if you do all of that. It's just really annoying.
So where'd you put the earplugs? Up his nose?
Up his nose. Could work, you know. You can tape up their mouths, apparently. There's tape that you're supposed to put on,
and that's our kidnap fantasy, Trish. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Exactly. So I just take these earplugs with me everywhere.
Good idea.
You know, because just, you know how sensitive I am about everything. But if it's happening more frequently than a weekly day session, if we're talking about every night, you probably do need to have a conversation with your partner about it, about how disturbing this is for you. And they might laugh it off and go, oh, you know. And I have to say at this point as well, this is women as well. Women snore. It's not just the men. And the male,
we do have
might be
a relative in the family. It's quite a heavy snorer.
Yes, you told me about that. Yeah. Yes, through the walls. Yes, it's quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel for her.
She probably have to have a sit down and have a proper chat about this, because it is affecting your life and your relationship. And, you know, things that can help is lifestyle factors. If they're overweight, if they're not doing exercise, that kind of thing, maybe you could gently suggest that you both go on a health kick, etc. And smoking and sleeping pills exacerbate snoring, so just be aware of those. But it is worth getting checked out by a doctor if you make lifestyle changes and it's not making any difference and you're kind of counting beer nights, because, you know, if somebody's feeling sleepy during the day or they're making gasping or choking noises while they're sleeping, they may have something called sleep apnea, which is serious if it's not treated, because it's where your breathing stops. So you need to go and see a GP. You could be referred for a specialist. Gum shield devices apparently can help for some people, which, again, your GP can refer you, or you can get that from your dentist. And then just a few other helpful suggestions that we've heard. Bose sleep buds, they're these little kind of electric, you know, and they play lovely sounds. You pop them in, you pay £180 for them, though. A lot of people swear by them. This is one I didn't know, but if your local hearing aid shop or center, there will be one, you may not know about it, they can make customized earplugs for you, so that's worth checking out. So that should be more helpful. And then there's some nice recycled eco-friendly earplugs called Happy Ears, and that costs £22.50 for a discovery pack where they'll send you different sizes and you can work out which are the best ones for you. So yes, what are you thinking? Snoring?
Well, I wear a lot of earplugs for swimming, so I'm a expert on where you get earplugs.
Yes.
And you can get them.
Do you have snoring?
I do have. Mr. Candy is a bit of a snorer on the old beer and booze, booze nights, but I mostly just give him a good old shove, and fury is enough to frighten him. Of it, but I do think it is a really big problem.
Oh, it's huge.
You know, within the family we've had it, it's quite hard to cure it, to be honest. You know, you can lose weight and you can change, but I think it really, what we're saying here is the spare room is probably the best option, because you've got to get a bit of sleep, haven't you?
And if but you I like have your one, tips. It's the sleeping, the earplugs, isn't it? But yes, it's interesting because it's actually listed on the NHS website about if it's affecting your relationship. Yeah. So they clearly take it seriously, the medical profession.
Right.
Right. Finally, of course, we have to have Lilibet sharing. Her problem.
Controversial name.
Oh, a bit controversial, but we're going to use it.
Right. Okay.
Oh, this one. Lilibet says, I feel really lonely. I run my own business and I'm currently struggling with my menopause journey. I have friends, but they're all busy people. They would absolutely be there for me, but I hate reaching out as they're dealing with their own stuff. My family are there for me, but don't really understand the menopause. My dad is also dealing with cancer, so I'm keen not to burden them. My hubby is great, but out at work a lot. Today I worked from home. I felt so floored by exhaustion, I fell asleep on the sofa at 11 a.m. and woke up again feeling completely unable to move at 1:45. I'm on HRT, but changed recently from patches to gel. I know things will improve, but as Mental Health Week this year was about loneliness, I wanted to be brave and share.
Right, I think here for this lovely Lilibet, because we really feel for her, don't we, Trish? Because I think we've all been in this loneliness place a little bit during perimenopause. So some housekeeping has to be done around how well you are physically first. So iron levels can make you feel absolutely exhausted if you've got a lack of iron in the body. We know that from the experts we've spoken to, vitamin D, all of those things are part of what makes you feel physically very tired. So I think you do need to check on that. And I think Liz L's website is really good on things like that, where you supplements you need to take, questions you need to ask yourself. So on the kind of more emotional side of it, what I would do, Lilibet, is I would write down a list of what you're dealing with. She's dealing with a lot here. Mm-hmm. I mean, her dad's got cancer. Her family don't really understand. She's going through the menopause. Write down the list of what you're dealing with and then write a very short line about how you feel about that and what your mm-hmm. feelings are in your head, because a lot of what she's saying here is quite harsh on herself, and I feel like she needs to soften those feelings in her head, because those feelings become actions. We had Julia Samuel, the therapist, on, didn't we? And they do, and they will physically affect your health. Neurologically, that will happen. So the feelings, that not being soft in your head to yourself, will make it harder for you physically. So once you've written that down, all therapists say this, writing it down is a way of getting it out. And what it does, I'm going to swear now, Trish, because Julia uses this phrase in her book, is it shuts up the shitty committee in your head, telling you you're not being tough enough, you've failed. And we know so many women of our generation have this kind of sense of burnout as well. So once you've written that down, it might make it easier for you to be kinder, for Lilibet to be kinder to herself. Now, with the loneliness, I think you have to be quite proactive about loneliness. I think you have to solve that as a problem. She has to ask her family for help. I'm really pleased that she put this on the Facebook group, because I think that is step one. She was saying, I'm lonely, I need help. So step two is, once that's out, saying to her partner and her kids, I need a bit of help here. I'm lonely and I'm sad and I need you to help me. What are the things that would help, what they could do? And then I think you need to get out and about. I think you do need to maybe find a hobby, and something like swimming. I'm almost saying outdoor swimming, it's full of women who find each other, and the swimming is often the least important part of it. There's reading clubs, there's craft clubs, you know, it feels like one of those old Cosmo lists, self-help lists, doesn't it? But social interaction is really good for the vagus nerve, the nerve that controls kind of all our body, really, and it's really good for you neurologically. We are only as good as our social connections, and it should be prescribed by the doctor, frankly. So you have to take that first step, I think, and you do have to find people. You might not like the first lot of people you find, you might not fit in, but you will find your tribe somewhere.
Yeah. See, I don't think she's actually looking for new friends, because she's got lots of friends, interaction, lots of family. She just isn't able, as she says, she doesn't feel able to, or know how to ask for help and how to reach out, because she thinks she's being a burden. And I remember feeling exactly like that at the peak of my sort of perimenopause, you know, in my late 40s with work and everything. And I think it is, you know, how lovely that she's got all these people in her life who clearly do love her, and she just needs to recognize that and acknowledge that and know that, even if, you know, it's just a question of her telling them how she feels and they listen over a glass of wine or a cup of coffee, that's going to make her feel better, I think. And you're not a burden, Lilibet, to anybody.
No. And also, if your dad is going through, you know, I know a lot of people who have relatives who are suffering with cancer and they're in particularly terrible time, you're still allowed to have your own feelings. You can't spend your life in a trauma top trance. Well, that's worse, so I'm not allowed to feel this. It doesn't, you know, it isn't healthy to be like that. You are allowed to feel those feelings.
Yes. So anybody else like feeling like that, reach out, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
So there are some solutions and suggestions for midlife problems. And if the idiom, a problem shared is a problem halved, is true, I think we've quartered these problems between us. Is that too much maths for you?
It is a bit too much maths. Maybe just add in here that we're not qualified therapists.
No, we're not.
So this is just life advice from...
It is.
We have interviewed a lot, so that's
We've interviewed a lot and we've experienced a lot, but yes, we are here to help.
I would write to Dear Marge. I'd write, Dear Marge, my small friend is murdering me with maths dilemmas.
Well, good, because you're doing nostalgia noodle this week.
Stop making it about maths.
It might happen again. Wait and see.
This is podcasting gold, isn't it? We're going to win an award for this, Trish, aren't we? We have arrived at our MMM section of the show, Midlife Milestones and Magic Moments. This is the part of the show in which one of our listeners is going to share a little bit of inspiration, which might be something everyday or something completely life-changing, a decision to walk away from something or a brave new venture you're heading towards. Today, our caller is Lauren.
Hello, Postcards from Midlife. My name is Lauren. I'm 58 years old, married with 4 adult children. So there I was about 7 years ago, sitting sunbathing on holiday, contemplating the year I had just gone through with my family, which included losing two dear friends to cancer and my husband suffering a heart attack. Thankfully, he survived. And thinking about what I'd achieved throughout my life and what's happening next. And given that I was in the fortunate position that my parents were not ill and having to look after them, three of my kids had left home and my fourth was about to start uni, what to do? So I thought maybe I would do a degree. Well, my family were really encouraging with the idea. Anyway, so I had not studied, let alone written essays, since I left school in 1979. Here I am, 6 years later, just a few weeks away from handing in my final assignment and hopefully graduating from the Open University with a BSc in psychology. There has been a lot of sweat and tears and imposter syndrome feelings, but with the support of my family and my friends, I've almost made it. And I'm now starting to visualise standing at the Barbican in September receiving my degree, seeing my children and husband, all who have degrees, in the audience. And I have to say, I couldn't feel any more proud of myself or empowered as the woman that I have become since I started my degree. So my message to all of you lovely listeners is that really, it is never too late, and you've just got to go for it, because you never know what lies ahead. Life is certainly not a rehearsal.
We are actually halfway through the series, and can I just point out that it's 2-0 in Nostalgia Noodle Guess the Year. 2-0 to me, yes. But it's your turn this week to claw back.
Don't make it about maths. Then I'll be able to do it. Don't okay. add in
any. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to do
no,
any numbers.
Guess.
I'm just yeah. going to let you guess. I'm not going to,
go
you know, bamboozle, confusle you. Right.
Get on with it, woman.
It was the year that Four Weddings and a Funeral
oh, my
came out. Liz Hurley in that dress. Do you remember that Versace dress? But also the year Pulp Fiction came out with Uma Thurman in that white shirt and that Chanel black nail varnish. Okay,
here's a few. Are we more. In the 2000s?
I'm not saying anything because I'm not allowed to mention numbers, remember?
I'll have to mention it at the end. You'll have to tell me.
I will
me.
Do at the end. The Channel Tunnel was opened by the Queen and François Mitterrand.
Blimey.
Yeah.
I think I might know. No.
Yahoo and Amazon launched and Lidl came to the UK.
Oh, Lidl.
Yeah. Little. Rosemary West was arrested for murder.
Right.
Horrific. Do you remember all that?
Yes, I do.
And then this one's really going to help you. I think PJ and Duncan had a hit with, what was the song?
I can't remember because of brain fog, but I listened okay. to it yesterday.
Okay. Let's get ready to rumble.
That's
okay,
it, yeah.
Right. Guess the year.
This is 90s then, isn't it?
It is.
I'm saying 1998.
Oh, no.
7, 97 then.
No.
9.
No.
5.
No.
4.
Yes. Okay, I think we're going to have to say you didn't get that.
Oh, my goodness.
If I told you that Friends had come out that year and The Vicar of Dibley, would that have helped?
Well, I think I've got that numerical dyslexia.
Yes, I just don't have
a number. Nothing in my brain associates. If you say a number, then
yeah,
I
was quite confounded when you said 2000s. After that first clue, I was like, what is she on about? Four weddings and a funeral.
It's because I'm very creative.
Yes, that's true. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know what happens when I look at a calendar? I can't even work that out either. There's numbers everywhere. They just all jumble up in my head.
Oh, dear. There's always next time.
Okay.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Postcards from Midlife. New episodes are available to listen to every Sunday on your podcast provider, and we would really appreciate it if you can make sure to download your episodes so they count on our listener numbers. And if you could rate and review us too, that would be most marvellous.
We would love to hear about your midlife moments, magic milestones. I've mixed it all up, all the M's.
Doesn't matter,
there.
It's all the M's.
And please tell your friends about us. You could join our private Facebook group, which is all about the podcast and the midlife conversation. Come over there for a chat.
And you can use it to post any feedback on the topics we discuss. Tell us what you were doing in our nostalgia noodle year, 1994, as well as suggestions for other things you'd like to hear talked about or celebrities and experts you'd love to hear interviewed. And please do email us your midlife moments to hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com or pop a little message on Instagram. Goodbye.
Bye.